Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, LeBron James tapped in, Caitlin Clark tapped in, people who I didn't even know watch golf, Rex, were tapping in to see. Everyone wanted to see whether Tommy Fleetwood could finally get it done on the PGA Tour on Sunday at the Tour Championship, the PGA Tour season finale. He did. What a great story to end the year as the FedEx Cup champion.
It felt so appropriately poetic that he would do it here, that he would need 164 PGA Tour starts to win his first PGA Tour title, and yet he only needed 1 week to lift up two trophies. And it's an amazing finish that even he had a hard time wrapping his head around earlier in the week when we asked him about, if you had to win one, this probably is going to be the one that you want to have on your resume as the first, because not only did he win the Tour Championship, but now he will go down as a FedEx Cup champion. And there's some, we can probably talk about how that probably doesn't quite add up after the season that Scottie Scheffler had. And there's certainly going to be some context that's going to be needed in the history books going forward when people look at Scottie's season and then see Tommy Fleetwood. That doesn't feel right at all. But it was really cool to watch Tommy do it. And I will say, hearing him talk earlier in the week, and I think you and I have touched on this really probably since Memphis, and he had his most recent heartbreak near miss and came up short there. Just the idea of, I can't imagine anyone having a better attitude. And I don't exactly know how much that means when it comes to trying to win on the PGA Tour. But if you look at the end result, it has to mean something. It has to add up. It has to go into the memory banks. He mentioned on Saturday night talking about still having an outlook that as long as I put myself in contention, that's all I can ask. And I love the fact that he referenced the mistakes he made in Memphis and how I'm just going to try to learn from them. And all day long, it just looked like he was in control. And then look, I think maybe his swing got a little bit off early in the round. He talked about trying to regroup, but just past the turn and trying to figure things out. But you never looked as if he was going to spit the bit coming down the stretch. And I think that was the difference between this week and all of those other near misses. And in his, this is a little bit out there because we always talk about, did he win it or did he lose it? I would argue he won this one.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think anybody really made a run at him. So we mentioned this about Cameron Young when he broke through and won his first PGA Tour title at the Wyndham Championship. It's a best case scenario to walk up 18, even that 18th hole with a 3-shot lead. It's really hard to imagine that you could have messed that one. But it was cool seeing here at East Lake, because it kind of harkened back to when Tiger 2019 and how the fans just got behind him. It wasn't quite at that level, but it was still pretty cool.
Use the word poetic. Yeah. For a player who had not won on the PGA Tour in 163 prior starts, and then who earlier in the week said it would be, quote, funny. Wouldn't it be funny if he won the Tour Championship for funny, his first PGA Tour victory and got two wins out of it? I would use the word poetic too, Rex, but also in a different sense, because when you think back of what we're going to remember from 2025, everyone is going to think back to Rory McIlroy breaking through at the Masters finally and becoming a player for the ages, completing the career Grand Slam. I know every player's journey is singular and every player's journey is unique, but Tommy Fleetwood's story was the Rory Masters story, just writ small. Like, he was a player, 34 years old, who was so accomplished. He's a 7-time DP World Tour winner. He's a Ryder Cup hero. He's one of the best players in the world, indisputably, who couldn't quite get over the line. Like, that's similar to Rory's Augusta dream as well, just obviously on a much grander scale. But I would also say too, Rex, that over the past few years, you know, prior to this April, Rory's story, his of perseverance, of dusting himself off, of trying to overcome adversity, of blocking out distractions, of overcoming his own personal doubts, like, that captured the imagination of the entire sports world, didn't it? Like, everyone was watching of whether Rory could pull it, could pull himself together on the second nine. Rory came to understand and eventually embrace the plight that he had trying to show up at Augusta each and every year to get it done. Tommy Fleetwood, in my mind, was very similar, that now his plight had sort of captured the imagination of the sports world. Everyone was rooting for him. He certainly seemed like the fan favorite on site there at East Lake, trying to will him across the line. He has just shown, as I think Rory did through all those years at Augusta National, unbelievable grace, unbelievable poise, unbelievable perspective and attitude. He spoke on Saturday night of relishing the opportunity, having the time of his life out there, even as he's trying to shed this burden. I can't imagine a more popular way to end the PGA Tour season than a Tommy Fleetwood double dip.
No, I love that comparison to Rory. You're right. Maybe on a smaller scale, as you pointed out, maybe with just lowercase type would be the way I would probably put it. I will say there is, I feel like there is one distinction though here. I feel like there was a clarity to Tommy that maybe Rory didn't have for many, many years going into Augusta. We talked a lot about the idea that Rory tried everything. Every year he would show up at Augusta with a new plan. Maybe I need to play the week before. Maybe I don't play the week before. Maybe I come in for a practice round. Maybe I don't come in for a practice round. Maybe I try to embrace all of the fans. Maybe I put myself in a bubble. Like, he tried everything to come up with this. So I think at some point there was a level of frustration that I don't think Tommy ever reached, which is pretty amazing when you consider how accomplished he was. You're right. Not only was he a multi-time winner on the European tour, but when you look at what he had accomplished in the Ryder Cup, going undefeated alongside Francesco Molinari in Paris, that's a feat that not only goes on a resume, that you put that on a Hall of Fame resume. I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer, but that's the type of thing that you put alongside. So the idea that I think he was a little bit more comfortable in his skin, and everyone said it, and we kept repeating it, and even he said it, that I feel like I'm going to get there, even this afternoon. When Rory finished up right about the time Tommy was making the turn, he's like, look, even if it doesn't happen today, he's going to do it. We all know he's going to do it. He's too good of a player. Now he's put himself in contention twice in the playoffs. So I do love that comparison, because you could see as he finished up, there was a very similar, everything just rolled off his shoulders. Hmm. His stepson came running out, gave him a big hug. There was a couple of Europeans waiting for him, Justin Rose and some others. And with the crowd sort of chanting Tommy, it is funny, though. Dan Hicks told an interesting story about talking to him in Memphis and him essentially telling Tommy that the way you embraced it in Memphis and the way you just owned up to the pain, like, you won yourself a lot of fans. And Tommy's response was, my story is not done being written for this season, not just for his career. My story is not done being written. It's really a cool kind of way to put the exclamation point on what was an otherwise pretty mundane year for Tommy.
Yeah, I think Tommy Fleetwood has become eminently famous and probably the third most popular player, probably right in line with like a Jordan Spieth type, despite not having won. Like, I think Tommy Fleetwood became a fan favorite for not winning. And I think you could probably make the argument that he was more popular as a winless player on the PGA Tour than perhaps if he just won some run-of-the-mill PGA Tour event. You know, we're not going to call it names, but obviously the FedEx Cup champion, the Tour champion, elevates you in terms of stature. But had he just... You know, had he pulled it off at the Canadian Open, had he pulled it off at the Travelers, I don't think would have had quite the resonance that this was. And sort of bringing back the Rory comparison even further, the phrase that I continually use with Rory was that if he were to win at Augusta National, he would be historically resilient, because no player has ever needed that many attempts to complete the career Grand Slam. For him to do it at Augusta in April was obviously amazing. Tommy Fleet was in the same category. He had 30 top five finishes on the PGA Tour. That is the most since the PGA Tour began keeping those statistics in 1983 without a victory. 30 top fives, had not gotten it done, and said he gets it done Sunday at East Lake. When you look, Rex, in particular, at the final round performance alongside Patrick Cantlay, it was the third 54-hole lead that Tommy Fleetwood has had this season. What stood out specifically about how he handled that stage in that cauldron?
Well, let's go back to Memphis, because you and I broke it down pretty deep on that night's podcast, looking at what went wrong. And there was no other way around it. I think I went to where nerves, where anxiety is going to manifest itself. It's going to be in the short game, that when you're as good of a ball striker as a guy like Tommy Fleetwood is, or a Scottie Scheffler, you don't necessarily feel it when you're hitting a driver or even a full shot from the fairway. That's almost muscle memory. That's almost easier, because you're taking it, you're almost looking at the target and reacting the way a true athlete does. It's around the greens that you're going to end up with those issues. And that's what we saw late in Memphis from Tommy Fleetwood. He hit a poor chip shot. I believe it was on the 16th hole. Hit a
16
poor
and
putt
17.
He hit a poor putt on 17. So all of those things were an indication of, well, if you want to look at what went wrong, clearly he was feeling the nerves. I don't know what else to call it. We can sit here and probably come up with a whole lot of words. What stood out to me, maybe for the week, but more so today, he led the field in strokes gained putting, not by a small margin. He picked up more than 9 shots on the field, and he picked up strokes more than a shot on the field on Sunday. That, to me, is an indication that something clicked today that hadn't clicked before. Simplest terms, if you want to try to quantify it, if you want to put a number to it, that, to me, is what did it.
Yeah, I think when you look back at the Travelers Championship, he was undone by indecision over those last four holes, that last hour, just sort of in between clubs, picking the wrong club with caddy Ian Finnis, whatever the case may be. He just wasn't sharp enough and was just adding to the amount of stress. And then coupled with a Keegan Bradley surge, that's how he lost that tournament by three putting the last hole. When you think back to Memphis, you're exactly right. The chip shots on 16 and 17, there was also indecision about how he should play those pitch shots, particularly on 16. Should I go high? Should I go low? Ended up playing through right in the middle and then bones it over the front of the green. I think when you look back at Sunday the Tour Championship, what he can be particularly proud of is, as you mentioned, his putting, like lapping the field on the greens, more than 450 feet worth of putts, double anyone else in that category. In particular, that range from 7 to 15 feet. He only missed 6 times all week. I know the putting surfaces were incredible. The green hasn't really taken over yet. Lots of guys were making putts, but no one was making putts with the frequency that Tommy Fleetwood did. Just another Phil Kenyon success story as well, the putting coach for Scottie Scheffler.
And it's a great point when you go back to the Travelers, because you're right. You can point to that as just indecision. It seems like he and his caddy got wrapped up in something. And there was a moment late on Sunday where you were almost feeling a little bit of flashback on the 13th. Oh, I'm sorry, on the 15th hole, the par three,
yeah,
which he put in the water. He put his tee shot in the water the day before. Really demanding tee shot. If you look at it, really took its toll on the field. I would argue that Scottie Scheffler lost whatever chance he had of winning this tour championship on the 15th. It's just a demanding tee shot. And there was a long, long pause. And a lot of conversation between he and Ian. As a matter of fact, he kept blowing on his fingers and like wiping his hand off. And I was like, what's happening here? Like, are we revisiting what happened at the Travelers? But he ended up executing a very, very good shot. It did not hold the green, but he did hit a good iron shot and made a 4. Still bogeyed it, but it felt like a victory in that moment.
I mean, is that not the scariest shot? Like, oh, everyone always points to 17 at TPC Sawgrass for good reason. But guys are hitting like pitching wedges at most. If the wind's into you, you're hitting a 9-iron into 17. Rex, this was all you can handle, certainly on Saturday for the third round. I mean, it was 225 yards. This was 215 yards. Guys are hitting 5-irons into a green that is just slightly bigger than TPC Sawgrass, with just such an immense penalty, particularly with the runoff areas both long and short into the sides. I mean, just an absolutely brutal hole. 4 was not going to lose him the golf tournament. 5 potentially could have lost in the golf tournament with the flashbacks from what he did, dumping that in the water on Saturday.
Cantlay made a 5, yeah.
I was really impressed, Rex, with how Tommy Fleetwood sort of regained his composure throughout the day. Like, he clearly stated his intentions early, making birdie on 2. I believe he was the only player in the entire field of 30 players to birdie the par 3 second hole, stating his intentions. He bounced back from a bogey on 5 by making 2 in a row. Patrick Cantlay and he had a 2-shot swing on the 10th hole, immediately rebounded with 2 in a row on the 12th and the 13th hole. He was clearly dealing with Patrick Cantlay's pace of play. Tommy Fleetwood wanted nothing more than to get this round over with. I think Patrick Cantlay was actually quite content dropping anchor. I know they got warned and tried to get back into position, but they were never put on the clock, so we didn't have that added stress. But just sort of dealing with all of these other elements, having more time to think. I was just really impressed by his composure, hitting the fairway with the tee shot on 14, being safe with his tee shot on the 215-yard 15th. In my opinion, those are the two shots that won in the golf tournament.
And going back to Rory at the Masters, and I think I saw the same thing. We saw the same thing from Tommy today. There is a physical toll that being in this position takes out of you. You could see it in his body language. It seems as if he was in his own world. He wasn't smiling. I mean, Tommy is a fun person to watch play golf. He's very gregarious. He kind of shows emotions on his face. He's not a robot out there like many PGA Tour players, but today it seems like he was. And I will also go back that the fact that Patrick Cantlay started, I believe he was 3 over par through his first 2 holes, that only helps. Like, if you're going to get off to a start and the guy you're tied with going into the final round is going to make a mess of the first 2 holes, if you needed a best case scenario and you're Tommy Fleetwood to try to get, yes, I know, yes, I'm in a parking lot right now, to try to get off the snide, that was the way to do it.
I will take over from this point until the car alarm goes away. Like, he was certainly bailed out at times, right? Patrick Cantlay's shaky start, he was sort of in recovery mode all day, clearly was not at his sharpest on Sunday. Scottie Scheffler, you know, double crosses tee shot on 1 OB, did well just to make a bogey. rinsed it on 15 and made a double. Cameron Young started hot, eventually fell back. Russell Henley could not buy a putt. Keegan Bradley looked like he was going to throw himself in the mix. Also faded down the stretch, hitting another water ball on 15. As well as Tommy Fleetwood played, it also was a perfect run out for him, where he was not seriously challenged over the past hour. So I think that certainly benefited him in that instance. This was an interesting litmus test because everyone kept talking, Rex, about how this was the new format for the Tour Championship. In reality, it was the same old, same old. It was just like the laziest. It was the laziest solution to the problem of just having a 72-hole stroke play format. I will say that Tommy Fleetwood is definitely a fitting playoff winner, right? Like, he went T3 in Memphis, T4 at the BMW, and now wins the Tour Championship. That is a great playoff champion. I think it would be very deserving as a playoff title. You have a hard time convincing me, though, that even with this quote-unquote new format, that he is the season-long champion. How do you think that this played out over 72 holes in 4 days at Eastlake for the Tour Championship?
No, it was refreshing, and I wrote it Saturday night, and I really wasn't trying to troll the Tour, although I got some feedback that they felt like I was, and it was always good fun and games for us to do the other leaderboard, the real leaderboard, when they did the shadow leaderboard, when they did starting strokes. It just took a little bit of a spreadsheet magic just to figure out who would actually be leading. What would the leaderboard look like? The world ranking base it on the shadow leaderboard. That's the way they doled out points. Colin Morikawa got first place points here last year, but Scottie Scheffler got the win because of starting strokes. I went in the opposite direction on Saturday night. I did the shadow leaderboard going back to starting strokes and pointing out you wouldn't have nearly as many compelling storylines if we still had starting strokes here this week as we did just going back and doing things the way they should. You had some players who were roughly in the mix. They were kind of in the universe. You had Akshay Bhatia, who was 29th.
Number 30. He was
number 30?
He was the bubble boy.
Chris Goddard was right in the mix. Like, look, they needed something really special to happen on Sunday. They needed some help from Tommy Fleetwood. But you would never have had that scenario coming into Sunday. You would never have that scenario coming into Thursday. Let's be honest. The idea that you could spot Scottie Scheffler 10 strokes, even over 72 holes, that's ridiculous. Like, anyone who started this tournament in 26th through 30th place knew that I've got no chance. Like, Scottie Scheffler's not giving me back 10 strokes. It wasn't going to happen. So this was refreshing on that level. Now, I said that this is very much a transition year. You and I talked about it on the Wednesday podcast. The fact that Brian Rolapp, the new CEO of the PGA Tour, addressed this earlier in the week. Simplicity was one of those keywords. Of the three keywords, he leaned in to simplicity. I felt like he was talking only about the Tour Championship, but to be fair, I think he was talking about the regular season, postseason, and even the off season. So I think there's a lot of things that they're going to be looking at. And there's also, and again, I don't want to put an asterisk by this because you're absolutely right. Tommy Fleetwood should, I said I'm not going to put an asterisk by this.
However,
there is no however, because Tommy Fleetwood did play the best in the playoffs by far of any player on the PGA Tour. But you do have to do some explaining when it comes to the history books. And again, when we look back 10 years from now, we're going to try to figure out Tommy Fleetwood, huh? Like, how did that work out? Wasn't that in the middle of Scottie Scheffler's crazy run? Like, how did that not happen? Not that it's wrong. Not that I'm sitting here saying that he's not a deserving champion. Not that I'm saying, I would argue that of the two storylines, and we root for storylines, not for players, of the two storylines I was going for on Sunday, Tommy Fleetwood was clearly one and Keegan Bradley was the other.
But I think the PGA Tour, when you think about the number of storylines that were prevalent here at the PGA Tour season finale, a lot of those stories were boosted or juiced by the upcoming Ryder Cup. Were they not? Seemingly every player who was in the mix had some sort of Ryder Cup implication, whether it was Keegan Bradley trying to sort of validate, potentially picking himself as a captain's pick. Maybe you had Cameron Young, who has been playing as well as anyone over the past month. You had, maybe a Chris Goddard, who was playing well, crashing the party. Justin Thomas, who was seventh in points, is obviously going to be getting a pick as well, trying to justify that as well. Patrick Cantlay, who a lot of fans have sort of been hand-wringing about whether he warranted a pick despite his sublime team match play record of 15-6-1. And so I think if you remove sort of that undercurrent that you had over these past couple months, maybe the Tour Championship would have been more flat. How I have settled on this, Rex, is I think the Tour Championship is a great tournament, but it is not a proper championship. It is not a proper conclusion of the season-long race. And to your point, like, Scottie Scheffler is going to go down as the best player of 2025, barring some sort of weird...
And he'll win the Player of the Year trophy. This isn't even a conversation. Yeah.
Correct. He's going to be the best player, and yet he's not going to be recognized, or he's not going to be appearing in any of the promotional materials for what is the PGA Tour's biggest prize, the PGA Tour's Super Bowl. Like, that does not make a whole lot of sense to me. I think you're spot on that. It's really hard for me to get too upset about what has transpired in 2025, that this is just a bridge year to something that is bigger and hopefully something that is better, something that better connects the regular season to the postseason. Brian Rolopp, the new CEO of the PGA Tour, was very clear that he was going to be looking at three things. He's going to be looking at parity. He's going to be looking at simplicity. And he is going to be looking at, what was the third pillar of excellence that the PGA Tour is going to be looking at? Oh, yes.
Scarcity.
When I look at the Tour Championship and what you could potentially do to winnow down the possibilities of what you could get, so you don't necessarily get that scenario. And look, this is, again, nothing against Tommy Fleetwood. He would have been in the Tour Championship format regardless of how this was going to play out, potentially lessening the field. But an Akshay Bhatia crashing the party, or a Chris Goddrup crashing the party, or a Corey Connors, who tied for fourth at Eastlake, crashing the party. If you're looking at what you can do to potentially give a Scottie Scheffler or Rory McIlroy, players who would define the 2025 PGA Tour season, a better chance of winning the FedEx Cup, it has to begin and end with shortening the Tour Championship field even more. I don't know what the right number is. 16 seems like a pretty good number, but maybe 15 as well. That has to be something that I would think the PGA Tour would look into, is limiting the season finale field even more than they already did. Like I'm not a huge fan of that. As we talked about on the Wednesday podcast, like, I think if the PGA Tour is going to go through this scarcity model, I think you have to look correspondingly at field size and making sure that those signature events, you know, have enough potential storylines and players to get into the mix. But if you are convinced that you need to crown a season long champion at the season finale, I think you have to shorten the field even more than 30 players.
I think there was some coding in the wording, not just from Brian Rolopp, but even in May when they announced that they were reverting back to essentially 36 holes of stroke play with everyone starting at even par here. The idea being that they want to make it, I believe the line was, the most difficult event to win and the most difficult event to qualify for. That's pretty clear. It feels like less is going to be more on that front as well. I do find it telling that you went straight to 16. I wonder why that would be the magic number for you, other than maybe, oh, I don't know, match play would be what you were angling for there. I see how it came up. My argument, and this only came up on Saturday because you and I both know we celebrated week zero of the college football season. You did it with a lot of barbecuing and a lot of time on your back porch, it looked like. But I did like the idea that in the pregame show on ESPN, Reese Davies was addressing the idea that the Big Ten wants to go to a, I'm going to get this wrong, 2016 playoffs, something 2014 playoff, something terrible. Ridiculous. And his argument against that, I believe he called it absurd, and I would tend to agree with that, was any other league expands the playoffs to put more emphasis on the regular season. So if that is part of the equation here, and it sounds to me that when you hear about scarcity, when you hear about parity, when you hear about simplicity from Brian Rolopp, you don't want to diminish the regular season. You would want to build it up. So it would be counterintuitive for you to cut the field in half or something along those lines. But I think you're right. I don't know that there's anything that's not on the table. However, I keep coming back to the idea that we have been searching. The tour has been searching, not we, but the tour has been searching diligently for the better part of two decades and hasn't come up with a solution. So I will be interested to see what they come up with next.
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty clear about what I think they should do. It does not sound like if you're looking at connectivity, Rex, which was the word that Brian Rolopp used over and over again in his press conference, like, it does not sound like they want to go the direction of wiping the slate clean after the regular season. All of a sudden, Scottie Scheffler is the FedEx Cup champion, and then you're competing for something entirely different for this three-week stretch. So I'm not quite sure the direction they're going to be going, but that formation of the future competition committee headed by Tiger Woods will certainly try to answer that question. I have to uncork this hot take that I've been simmering on for a couple of days now.
And been waiting on this for 25 minutes now.
Because I don't know whether I'm going to have another opportunity in the show to do it. But here is my take, Rex. We cannot have Eastlake in Atlanta for the Tour Championship site anymore. I think it's run its course, but I have a solution. This is no dig at our friends at Eastlake. I love Atlanta. I'm a Georgia guy. Like that's not where I'm going here. However, I think it is a strong PGA Tour venue, but it's not a particularly inspiring course. It doesn't feel special. It doesn't feel grand for what should be a really big event, the PGA Tour Super Bowl, as they've been calling it since the FedEx Cup's inception in 2007. And so I would move the PGA Tour season finale to Pebble Beach. And what I would do with Eastlake and what will no longer be the Tour Championship site, I would move Eastlake to 2 weeks before the Masters. That should be a signature event, 100 players, and it's like a primo Masters tune-up. So that way you would have, you know, maybe you could shift Doral around to, back in the old nostalgic spot leading into the Florida Swing. You have the Players' Championship, a couple of other events. You give it Eastlake, for whatever you want to call it, the Georgia Championship. 2 weeks later, you have the Masters. Here's why I think that works. It's the last stout test before the Masters. You have all of the big signature events. Could have this sort of proud partner setup that you saw for the Tour Championship. And I think it would better serve the golf course to be played in April as opposed to August. You were out there. It was hot. It was steamy. They preferred lies all four rounds for the PGA Tour season finale. To me, the golf course presents better potentially in April as opposed to August. And I think it could be great. A great standalone PGA Tour event as a signature event leading into the Masters. That's the hot take I wanted to uncork. And I've been sitting, I think about it for five or six days at this point.
I'm not going to wade in on this one because clearly I'll just let you have at it. Two things, though, I do want to point out. I like to address the world as it is, not the way I wish it would be. And
it's a clean sheet of paper, as Brian
Rolette. You can almost see over my shoulder the headquarters for the Eastlake Foundation. You can almost see a big Coca-Cola and Southern Company sign over my shoulder if
sure.
I adjust my camera.
There are lots of great communities on the PGA Tour. There are lots of great communities on the PGA Tour. There are lots of great partners and sponsors on the PGA Tour. I think it's better as an April event.
I'm not saying what you came up with is a bad idea. I think for the second week in a row, maybe the third, I'm sorry, the third week in a row, we, meaning you, have a solution looking for a problem. Because I'm not sure on the litany of things that's on Brian Rolapp's desk, and I can only imagine how long that to-do list is as the new CEO, moving the Tour Championship is not high on the list. Maybe someday it will be, and it's certainly a conversation worth having. But I think right now there's so many other things to go after. And I think actually kind of choosing Pebble Beach seems pretty random. There's a lot of other really good golf courses, just not here in the South this time of year. But certainly if you want to go to the West Coast, I think there's some other options as well. But I'm glad you got that one off your chest. It seems like you've been thinking about it for a while.
Well, look, I don't think Pebble Beach necessarily works as a PGA Tour venue in February either. You always have sort of sloppy weather. I think it better showcases in the summertime as opposed to just coming out of the winter series. If Brian Rolapp really wants to elevate the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup playoffs, that to me seems like a pretty good way to do it. All right, coming up after the break, we'll look at some of our best moments of the PGA Tour season, majors excluded. This is all about the PGA Tour, what has happened after the regular season. More of that coming up after this short break. Okay, Rex, there's been some bickering about what this next segment is going to entail. It's either going to be strictly PGA Tour moments of the year or just moments of the year in general, even though we have the biggest tournament of them all, the Ryder Cup, still on the horizon. And obviously, we're going to have a year-ending show in December where we're looking back on all of the things that happened in 2025. So please, the floor is yours. What were the best moments in golf, apparently, over the past 8 months?
This is why you and I need to spend more time actually talking about what we're going to talk about when the camera comes on instead of talking about all the other things. Fantasy football league.
Hot takes.
Barbecues, your hot takes, University of Georgia football, all of the things that we talk about and we don't get around to it. I did not realize this was a non-major category, so I'm going to lean in to mine anyway. Actually, I'm going to footnote all of this saying that you and I will probably do something very, very similar to this later this year. And this list, and by my own estimate, is probably going to change dramatically because we have found every 2 years that the best events of the year or the most interesting events of the year happen at the Ryder Cup. So certainly with Bethpage looming, I anticipate that some of these items will be checked off. And the non-major category, I will give you this, the Travelers Championship, Keegan Bradley, the emotions of winning in New England, the idea that suddenly this opened up a whole can of worms that we're going to address in the next segment about a playing captain. Should he play? Should he just captain? But I loved just the emotions of that moment for Keegan Bradley. And I don't want to call it a resurgence of his career because he had just won the year before. He'd won a playoff event the year before. But it certainly was an exclamation point for someone who is at the point in his career where, and he said it this week at Eastlake, he still felt like when he took the captain's job 2 years ago, essentially, that he was one of the top Americans, one of the 12 top Americans. And so it almost suggests that he foresaw what was going to happen. And if that's the case, then I do think there is a possibility that he not only plays, but he has a good plan in place. I'm going to color outside the lines now. I apologize. You and I hadn't discussed this beforehand. I don't know how anyone can pick anything other than Rory McIlroy at the Masters to become a historic figure to win the career Grand Slam after everything that he had been through, all of the trials and all of the errors that he had put himself through, all of the emotions, all of owning the idea that, man, this is the pinnacle for me. Like, this is going to complete my career, and I don't know what that must feel like. And I will also say it was by far the best TV I think I've seen, and I was kind of trying to register this. Probably since 2019, I mentioned Tiger Woods winning here at Eastlake. That was pretty cool. There's a lot of emotions, certainly when Tiger Woods won his last Masters. That was it. But the idea of Rory walking up that hill and trying to catch his breath because the emotions had just overtook him. And how many memes and GIFs it's turned into, because the look on his face was just the relief you feel, fill in the blank. Whatever it is you've just accomplished, like, that's the relief you feel. I think that's probably the moment of the year. And I finally did want to touch on the idea of, I believe I had leaned into it, not quite sure about you, that when the conversation ended with Rory trying to win the career Grand Slam, in my mind, it went to, well, Scotty would be the next one. I felt like that on the trajectory he is on, this makes sense. And I think I was very vocal before this year's Open Championship saying that that's the one that's going to be the hardest for him for all of the reasons that you can point out. The idea that no other championship in the history of the game has such fluctuations in weather and ending up on the wrong side or the good side of the draw. You can get completely unlucky at that particular event. You can also get completely unlucky playing Lynx golf. His brilliant brand of golf can execute 100%, and he cannot miss a shot, and he can still end up in a really bad spot. So that's why I thought the Open Championship was going to be the hardest for him to win. So much for that. He put it aside very, very quickly.
This is my game, and okay. So I'm going to keep this strictly to PGA Tour events. I want to go back to something you said with the Travelers Championship, because I agree that was one of the tournaments of the year, and it actually made me think. Friend of the program, Josh Carpenter, Sports Business Journal, pointed out that two of the four highest rated PGA Tour events this season very much involved Tommy Fleetwood. Like, Tommy Fleetwood is a protagonist, the Travelers Championship and the FedEx St. Jude Championship. Tommy Fleetwood did not win either of those tournaments, but they rated very, very well. Is Tommy Fleetwood the needle? Like, we're going to have to wait to see how the Tour Championship was, but you look at the storylines heading into it and some of the high-profile athletes who were tuning in. You would think that's going to produce a pretty good number, even if I would say the last half hour was a little bit anticlimactic as it looked like he was going to win. You mentioned Rory at the Masters. I think the Masters triumph, though, was only possible because of what Rory did earlier in the season. Like, he'd never had a better spring than he had in 2025. He won at Pebble Beach. He won the Players' Championship. I think one of the memories, the best moments of the year for me, was that Monday playoff at the Players' Championship. I remember driving into TPC Sawgrass on Monday morning, like, positively giddy about the potential. First of all, it was drastically cool than it had been the day before. The wind was in a completely different direction. It was howling. It was like 30, 35 miles an hour. You had sort of that, you know, cliched David versus Goliath setup with Rory McIlroy trying to win another Players' Championship versus J.J. Spahn. Sort of the prototypical journeyman who was trying to get the biggest victory of his career. The way it played out, in particular, the shot that J.J. Spahn hit on 17, just sort of cutting it right through the wind and hitting it long, I thought was very dramatic as well. To me, that was one of the moments of the year. And I think, sort of, Rex, when you zoom out, I think the signature events in general were a big positive for the PGA Tour this year. And you and I have quibbled with certainly the sponsor exemptions and the players who are getting in. Are
field
there too
sizes.
Many? Yeah, the field size. Should they be before a major? Should they be after a major? But I think when you look at the competition, When you look at the drama, you look at the winners we've had this year, Hideki Matsuyama, Rory McIlroy, Ludvig Åberg, Russell Henley, Justin Thomas, Sepp Straka, Scotty Scheffler, Keegan Bradley. I mean, those are the top players on the PGA Tour. In almost all of those tournaments were really, really compelling from a storyline standpoint and also a competition standpoint on the back. And that's obviously the point of the signature events, right? You're trying to get all the best players at some of the best golf courses that the PGA Tour has to offer and hope that you're going to have a very compelling Sunday. I think it was a big win. I also think, Rex, since you went on a long rant, I will go on one as well. This was a great PGA Tour season. Like, to put a bow on it, you had the Rory dominance early. You had Scottie Scheffler doing Tiger-like things throughout much of the summer, winning five times after what was a slow start because of the hand issue that he had during the offseason. You had the sort of lingering Keegan Bradley Ryder Cup drama. Would he become the first playing captain since Arnold Palmer in 1963? The way that he was playing in the summer, every single performance that he had analyzed and scrutinized to death. And then at the end in the playoffs in the PGA Tour postseason, the emergence of a 34-year-old Tommy Fleetwood, win this on the PGA Tour, becoming a household name. I think when you zoom out and you look at the PGA Tour, to me, it was a great season in 2025.
Yeah. No, I would agree. And you're right. The idea that, and again, this goes back to the parity line, and at face value, maybe you would roll your eyes at the idea of this parity, but certainly what Scottie Scheffler is doing is dominant. But you're right. There was a moment early in the season where you were thinking to yourself, is Scottie going to struggle, or his struggles going to continue because of that injury? You didn't know. There were some question marks around Scottie that we've never really had around Scottie before. And Rory was doing things that, as you pointed out, he'd never really done before. He wins the signature event at Pebble Beach. I will say the Players' Championship should have been among my list, because you're right, going back to TPC Sawgrass on that Monday. However, I had a little bit different feel to it. I don't know that you could have set up a better scenario on that first playoff hole, the par five downwind for Rory McIlroy against JJ Spahn. And certainly JJ Spahn winning the U.S. Open was the other one that stands out in my mind, because I don't know that anyone outside of JJ Spahn and maybe his immediate circle that would have picked him to win a major, let alone that major. But I'm with you. The PGA Tour season has been impressive. If you're Brian Rolapp, and look, he addressed the idea that you have to be comfortable with the product you have right now. I know what he's talking about is fundamental and substantial change, but based on what you had this season, not just from a TV ratings point of view, but you also had the stars of the game perform like you need them to perform, and you had the parity, the meritocracy, the things that you need to continue to stay fresh. You had the players like a Ben Griffin or an Andrew Novak, who emerged as multiple time winners on the PGA Tour. I think that's as important as the stars performing.
Who do you think, Rex, were some of the breakout performers of
Griffin?
JJ Spahn certainly comes to mind, a player who had just won once on the PGA Tour previously back in San Antonio a couple years ago. You look at last summer, 2024, a player who was so far outside the top 125 in the FedEx Cup standings. He was thinking about retirement. He was thinking that he was content with what he had done in his PGA Tour career, nearly $10 million in earnings, plenty of friends, had the win on the PGA Tour. All of a sudden, he becomes a major champion and is now on his first Ryder Cup team. Can't wait to see him in a couple weeks' time at Bethpage Black. What other players, though, do you think really established themselves as forces to be reckoned with in 2025 just because of their PGA Tour performance?
Well, and I'm going to go with Ben Griffin, and this is a little selfish because I was the Golf Central reporter at both of his victories this year, and obviously I was at the major championships where he finished inside the top 10. But before the Zurich Classic, before the Charles Schwab Challenge, I don't know that he really considered himself the type of player that could do what he ended up doing this season. I know his caddy pretty well. I've established a pretty good relationship with Ben. Getting to the PGA Tour, and we don't probably talk about this, just making it to this level is such an accomplishment for any golfer. Simply because of how difficult it is, certainly right now, and how it seems to become more and more difficult as we get further and further down the road towards whatever this era is going to be. However, when you get here, I think it's just natural to look around and think to yourself that, man, I can't beat Scottie. Like, I don't do what that guy does on a regular basis. And I think that was something that a player like a Ben Griffin struggled with. And I appreciated the journey until he got to having a chance to win next to your best friend Andrew Novak at the Zurich Classic. Certainly is a best-case scenario. Both of them won for the first time on the PGA Tour. And we talked about Tommy Fleetwood having the best case scenario to win for the first time at Eastlake today with the lead he had and how everything sort of transpired. That's perfect. If you can have your best friend next to you on a Sunday and you can share whatever the pressure is, I can't come up with a better way to pull it off. And then to follow it up as quickly as he did at Colonial and what I would argue was a dominant performance on a really difficult golf course, and then to carry that over into the major championships. I think this is going to be a year. I don't know if he makes it on the Ryder Cup team. We're going to get into that in the next segment, but it's certainly going to be a year that you remember as breakout when it comes to those particular players.
Yeah, remember just a couple of weeks after Colonial, he chased Scottie Scheffler all the way to the finish line at the Memorial PGA signature event on the PGA Tour as well. We've seen so many cautionary tales wrecks of players who have chased speed, who have chased distance, and it completely backfired and blew up in their faces. Ben Griffin is the rare success story in that aspect. Chase speed through fitness, through speed training. All of a sudden, he is a top 20 player on the PGA Tour in terms of strokes gained total. Hats off to him for what has been a great year. I would also throw out players like a Chris Goddrup, who we saw break out at the Scottish Open. Obviously, he'd already won on the PGA Tour in Myrtle Beach the prior year, but he elevated and became a player who was certainly on Keegan Bradley's radar. I don't think he quite did enough, despite my repeated insistence on the podcast about a month ago that Chris Goddard should be a part of the team. I think in future teams, he's a player who just epitomizes what the modern player looks like. Big, strong, burly, hits sort of one stock shot. He may have, you know, some deficiencies in his game, but the attributes that he does have and the benefits to his game that he does have could certainly outweigh those. I would also throw in a player, Rex, like an Aldrick Pottgeter, who is sort of in a similar vein to a Chris Goddrup, just limitless potential in what he could do with all of that power and all that speed. Yes, he's still a little bit raw. He's still a little bit unrefined, but a player who has plenty of runway ahead of him, Aldrick Pottgeter, if he can make his offseason quite productive and particularly dial in those wedges, he could really be quite dangerous in 2026. All right, plenty of Ryder Cup discussion after this short break. Did Keegan Bradley, who was in the penultimate group on Sunday at the Tour Championship, do enough to justify and validate him picking himself? We'll tackle that topic and so much more. Stay with us. All right, Rex, we waited till the end of the show. What a tantalizing tease before we give our picks and our thoughts on the U.S. Ryder Cup team. Just as a reminder, Keegan Bradley will finalize his 12-man roster at 11 a.m. Eastern time on Wednesday. The pick special, 2 hours. You and I will likely be appearing on that Golf Today as well. We'll also be talking picks on Monday on the Golf Today Roundtable with Damon Hack and Eamon Lynch. So we have all the PGA Tour data. We have all the strokes gained data. You've been talking to players. You've been talking to vice captains. Where do you land on where Keegan Bradley is going to go with his six captain's picks? And just as a reminder, the six automatic qualifiers so far: Scottie Scheffler, JJ Spahn, Xander Schauffele, Russell Henley, Bryson DeChambeau, and Harris English. How about the six wildcard picks? What do you think?
I think you can look into this week's Ryder Cup team dinner, which Keegan Bradley hosted. It had those six automatic qualifiers. Xander Schauffele wasn't in the field, but he Zoom called in just to be part of the dinner. I can imagine how comfortable that was for him at home eating whatever it is he was eating. And then it also included Colin Morikawa and Justin Thomas, who were 7 and 8 on the list. Didn't officially make it on the team, but I do appreciate that Keegan seemed to make them send the signal that, look, they're on the team. So though, let's just use that as a starting point.
Sure.
That's going to be two of the picks. I believe another two picks go to one, Patrick Cantlay, who had a good week here at Eastlake, and I think Sam Burns. And we've kind of gone over this before. Patrick Cantlay's record, not just in the Ryder Cup, but in the President's Cup, is very, very good. He has become a staple on the team, even though maybe this season hasn't been his best. I think he will be part of that team and an important part of that team. And we've also talked about Sam Burns. He's clearly found some sort of form here towards the end of the year. And even though Sam and Scottie Scheffler did not play together last year at the President's Cup, they make a really good team because they're really good friends. They vacation together. So it gives the captain a lot of flexibility. I got through that really as quick as I possibly could because now we get down to the fun part. I really think there's a couple names that come down to the last two picks. And we can kind of rifle through them if you want. I think Cam Young would be the starting point many people. Again, finding some form towards the end of the year. I think Ben Griffin, who we just had an extended conversation about, he's actually in the top 10 on the final points list. So you can't ignore him. Two victories, played really well in two majors. He pretty much did everything you would anticipate him doing keep in mind, he didn't do anything the year before. So the only reason he's even in the top 10 is based on this year's performance. It's a two-year rolling cycle.
Great point.
I think, to be fair, and I don't like to do this to him, Brian Harmon probably isn't the best fit for Bethpage. So I don't know that I would put him in the conversation for one of those final two spots. However, and we land on Keegan Bradley, the captain. And I have interviewed him four times this week. And I've walked away from each one of those interviews thinking to myself, he's picking himself. Absolutely. 100% he's going to pick himself. And then the very next day I'll walk away and like, yep, nope, he's not going to do that. He absolutely is not going to do that. He wasn't giving anything away, as he shouldn't. I mean, I think he and his vice captains are still kind of working a lot of things. However, he has said, don't cut me off quite yet. I'm not going to let you do that. However, he did say this week that most of the decisions, if not all, have already been made. And he also leaned into the idea that, are you really going to let a two-year cycle boil down to one tournament or even worse, one round? Okay, I totally agree with that. However, on Saturday night, after an unbelievably flawless round, he called it the best round of the year on the PGA Tour to put himself into contention going into Sunday. We asked him point blank, if you were to win tomorrow the Tour Championship, the FedEx Cup, would that change your mind? And he had to think about it for a minute, and he smiled and he goes, I guess we'll have to find out. And so I wrestled with that all day long as he hovered right around second or third place, and I couldn't believe how silly in my mind that sounded to me, that you're telling me that he's going to pick himself if he wins, but if somehow he finishes second, he's not. That's going to be the cutoff. And there's so many things that go into winning on the PGA Tour and not winning on the PGA Tour that largely, a lot of times, it doesn't even come down to anything you as a player did. It comes down to something else someone else did. You executed, you did what you needed to do. Someone was just marginally better. That, to me, makes no sense whatsoever. That is a very, very long-winded way of saying, and look, we can get into whether if he should or shouldn't. Rory McIlroy did a really good job of pointing out why he shouldn't, and I tend to agree with what Rory said. But I think those final two picks will come down to Cam Young and Keegan Bradley.
If it's between Cam Young and Keegan Bradley, to me, it's a no-brainer. I actually think the more interesting debate would be between Sam Burns and Keegan Bradley. We had Shane Ryan on the Golf Today Roundtable, a guy who literally wrote the book on the Ryder Cup. He called Sam Burns after the BMW the darkest of potential dark horses to make that team, and I didn't agree with that at all. In fact, the next segment, I went on and on about why Sam Burns should be on the U.S. Ryder Cup team. It obviously had to do with some of the form that we'd seen at the BMW, with form that he'd flashed in Canada when he almost won, the form he flashed at Oakmont with the 54-hole leader. He's also the best putter on the PGA Tour. And I think really importantly, he has been on the last three U.S. Cup teams. So he has been there. He has done that. He has proven himself. And even though I do not think he will play with Scottie Scheffler at Bethpage, Scottie paired quite successfully, if you remember, with Russell Henley at last year's President's Cup, Sam Burns did go 3-0 in team play at the President's Cup last September with Colin Morikawa and Patrick Cantlay as his partners, two players who you and I both anticipate will be on that team. If Cam Young is not on this U.S. Ryder Cup team, like the system is broken.
What are we doing?
What more could you possibly need the guy to show? He is a big hitter. He has course experience. He's proven himself in major championships and on the biggest stages that he can handle it. He's never really backed down in that sort of arena. He just won his first golf tournament in the regular season finale at the Wyndham Championship, and he has continued that form throughout the postseason. Top 12s in all three playoff events. Another good finish at Eastlake. To me, like Cam Young, it should be a no-brainer pick, and I'm with you. Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, Ben Griffin, Patrick Cantlay, Cam Young. To me, it's a question of, do you pick Sam Burns, or if you're Keegan Bradley, do you somehow make a call to Sam Burns and be like, nope, sorry, I'm picking myself? Listening to Keegan Bradley, and again, you were there. You can pick up on certain, certain tendencies, his tone, the manner in which he's delivering it. To me, it did not sound like whatever was going to happen at the Tour Championship had any bearing on his decision. And if you look back over the past 2 months, Sam Burns has played dramatically better than Keegan Bradley has over that stretch. And to me, the Keegan Bradley shooting 64, 63 in the second and third rounds of the Tour Championship almost seemed to me like a player who had been freed up, a player who had made the decision. We'll have to see in a month's time whether it was the right or wrong decision, but he was sort of at peace with it. And all of a sudden, he could then play the type of golf that Keegan Bradley is obviously capable of playing.
I did not bring those last two down. I actually picked Keegan and Sam Burns and Cam Young as well. So the person I left out, the decision, I guess, in my mind was between Ben Griffin And I don't think you paid attention on that front. It was between Ben Griffin and Keegan Bradley. I pick Keegan over Ben, I guess, if you're making the argument on
Whoa.
That.
Whoa. Well, I think that would be just as surprising as leaving a Sam Burns or a Cam Young off. I mean, what more did Ben Griffin need to show you? He has 10 of his last 12 events have been inside the top 15 of the PGA Tour. He does everything well from a strokes gain perspective. No, are you relying on him to go all four team matches? Very, very unlikely. But at ninth in the points to pick someone who was, I believe, 11th in points in Keegan Bradley, I think that would register as a
nine to 11 is a huge spread. That is not a huge spread. Like that happens all the time.
When you look at the points earned, particularly in 2025, it certainly would be.
I just think, and it goes to, and again, we can have a larger discussion on Wednesday after the picks are actually made. Because And I'm going to go back to the idea, and Keegan said it this week, that when he took the job 2 years ago, he felt like he was still one of the best Americans. He felt like he was still, reading between the lines, one of the top 12 Americans. So in his mind, this was always going to be a potentially difficult decision, which I totally understand. Of course, a player who's still competing on the PGA Tour has to think of himself that way. Whether he is or not, it doesn't matter. You have to convince yourself if you're a professional athlete. The ones that I'm going to have a hard time wrapping my mind around, that if it plays out the way I'm predicting it's going to play out, is the PGA of America. Because there is no way that in their minds, they thought that he was going to be a top 12 American, or that they thought he was going to be anywhere close to making himself a pick. Because if they did, why would you create such a scenario where you're putting this captain in an impossible position and through no fault of his own? And I don't expect Keegan Bradley not to take the job, but you put him in an impossible position.
I mean, we have historical precedents that the sitting U.S. Ryder Cup captain, his form falls off the year of the Ryder Cup. Keegan Bradley, to his credit, has not done so. The decision just comes with so much risk, so much distraction. Cannot wait until Wednesday when Keegan Bradley makes those picks. By the way, Rasmus Højgaard was the final automatic qualifier for that European Ryder Cup team. Those picks are made on Labor Day morning. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. You guys know the drill. NBCSports.com/golf, a.k.a. GolfChannel.com. For so much more on the Tour Championship, Tommy Fleetwood, and the Ryder Cup. Talk to you guys on Wednesday during the roundtable, and certainly on Wednesday after picks are made.